It's a Sound of Football podcast with Terry DeFelton, Graham Sibley, and your host, Jan Bilton.
Hello and welcome to Sound of Football 125.
Yes.
No train references there. But today we're going to be talking about trolling on that thing they call Twitter. And is it becoming the new hooliganism? So, interesting subject. The referee in the Liverpool-Manchester United game, Mark Halsey, came into a bit of abuse over his handling of the game, which I think we'll all agree was fairly distasteful. But we're going to talk about what that's doing to football, and is it going to cause some long-term consequences for the game, as we saw in the 70s and 80s with hooliganism and so on. So Terry, starting with you, what are your thoughts on it? I mean, you've seen some of these things that have been said, and it's not new. It's it's been going on a little while, and it's it certainly gets a lot of coverage. What are your thoughts on where it's heading? Is it the new hooliganism?
Well, it could be. I mean, obviously, it does manifest itself differently because, you know, there isn't the physical violence necessarily involved, although the worrying thing is it might lead to that one day. But the effect that it has generally on the game, people behaving towards other people in a really, really nasty and unpleasant way, may have an effect, and in a very public way, may have an effect on other more sort of like reasonably minded people who may look at this and say, well, I don't know whether or not I want to be associated with this. I don't know whether or not this is something that I want to involve, I don't know, my family in or myself in. I'd rather keep away from this. And it may even you know, turn perhaps, you know, some of the softer elements of football support away from the game because they feel it's a little bit too hardcore and a little bit too unpleasant. People like this have always existed.
Mm.
People who are angry and behave in an abusive manner, but because most of what's happened has been in the actual world, it's been relatively easy to separate yourself from it. You can just walk away and don't go to those areas, don't speak to those people, don't go get involved. But in social networking, particularly on Twitter, it's much harder to shield yourself from that, and that then presents a danger of some kind of contagion. And maybe, yes, a kind of, you know, a sort of parallel with the hooliganism of the 1970s and 80s.
Is it as bad as that, though? Sticks and stones and things like that? I mean, they're just words, but...
Yeah, I know. You don't want to be like a sort of scaremonger and say, oh, yeah, but thin end of the wedge. This is where it all starts off small and fun and games and sticks and stones, but... Sometimes it does turn into, from words to actual sticks and stones being thrown around down Green Street and what have you.
Yeah, I mean, it is a bit Daily Express to sort of, you know, we're not trying to instigate a moral panic or anything like that, but at the same time,
it's something you have to be aware of, because we have seen how emotive things like this have been, and it's usually been sportsmen and people in the media as well being caught up in events as they are unfolding. I think that Stan Collymore is a great example, isn't it, with the Luis Suarez-Patrice Evra case. And all of a sudden, these incidents, these isolated incidents that are happening on the pitch, which deserve to be talked about, but also they're expanding, they're growing, they're spreading like a virus because they're affecting other people who weren't even at the game. Mm. They're affecting people who are commentating on events. And of course, you know, their fans are going to be very partisan. They're going to be very, very protective over their club. I mean, I know when I shout at the telly when they come up with the latest Arsenal in crisis thing, and I've got the little switches in my brain to stop me from just, you know, putting the phone that's coming out of my, that's dribbling off my chin and putting it onto Twitter.
Well, from your personal account anyway.
Yeah, well, from my personal account. I do it on Sound Football all the time.
Not to mention all the other Twitter handles that you've got, which you use to secretly abuse people.
Oh yeah, there is that.
I have to admit to being genuinely shocked when I saw some of the things that were levelled at Stan Collymore. I didn't really think that people would get that. Mm. It was vitriol. It was horrific. It was genuinely shocking to hear people, you know, making the references they did to him. Yeah. It was just horrible.
Genuine, hardcore, unreconstructed racial abuse. I mean, yeah. Really desperately unpleasant.
Yeah.
I tweeted about it without pointing to the specific tweets. And I got a reply from someone who I've never met before, but I just know on Twitter. And who were saying, I had no idea people like this still existed.
Mm.
And which is what I was going back to earlier, is that usually we surround ourselves with like-minded individuals.
Yeah.
And the only likelihood that we're ever going to bump into people like that will be in the workplace. And, you know, in many cases, you avoid that as well.
Mm.
And so, yeah, it is a shock to see and to such views and such attitudes so brazenly, you know, displayed, that obviously, you know, you do kind of freak out a little bit, to be perfectly honest.
It is something that you have to, I mean, like most sort of like level-headed people, such as ourselves around this table, you know, believe it or not, listeners, it is difficult and it is eye-opening because you don't see it constantly going on in the newspapers. You have it alluded to in the more right-wing press, but it's never actually sort of like come out like we're seeing it on Twitter in certain occasions. But we also can't blind ourselves to the fact that it was only two elections ago that one person in 50 was voting BNP.
Mm.
And that's the country that we live in.
Yeah.
And it's shocking because we think, well, that's actually quite a lot.
We're watery liberals and we find this sort of thing shocking.
Exactly, but that means that at an Arsenal home game, I'm not just saying Arsenal, but at any ground where there's 50,000 people in there, there's 1,000 people who have voted for the BNP.
But they're not just racist, they're violent.
They are violent.
At least,
well, they
least
are violent in nature. Of intent.
Yeah, they use violent language. They may not be actually physically violent people. They may actually be cowards.
Yeah, and they probably are.
Maybe they are.
Keyboard warriors have always been.
I mean, people who vote for the BNP may be misguided, but they're not necessarily thugs.
No.
They may be daft, but not thugs.
Mm.
But these people are practicing some form of thuggery. And it may not be physical, but it may have, you know, physical, connotations. And I don't mean necessarily violence, but I mean also in terms of in the outside world and affecting how people perceive the game.
Well, it's almost an insight. I mean, I think that some of the fellas that got prosecuted for this didn't they use the charge incitement to?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, there are rules to sort of protect people from that. I mean, nowadays there are people that are quite sort of extreme people with extreme liberalism views that say, oh yes, this is curbs on free speech.
I
think it's a complete misunderstanding of what free speech actually is.
Yeah. Freedom of expression actually is, because the limits of that is based principally on the limits of your freedom is the limits of the other person's freedom. So the limits of my freedom is the limits of yours.
Yeah.
So if I don't have the freedom to punch you on the nose because you'll get a broken nose. Well, you won't, because I've got a really weak punch. Yeah. But you know what I mean? Because so this is how we govern society. So there's freedom of speech and then there's acceptable boundaries of behaviour. Yeah. And that's what these laws really, really are there to do.
Yeah.
And they're particularly important in situations like this where people get really angry about what's really just a game. I mean, it's... If you think about it, I mean, football's got nothing to do with anyone, really. Mm. I mean, but people affected mostly by football are the people who work in football, because it's their livelihoods. You know, fans just, you know, pay.
Don't the players have a responsibility as well, though? I mean, a lot of this... I mean, sorry, I don't mean to say that it's you know, for example, John Terry's fault that people behave like this. It's not. But I mean, their behaviour on the pitch has an influence on the way that that supporters behave.
Is there
something there as well?
Everyone's got a responsibility.
Yeah, it is a joint responsibility from everyone, and that includes the media and players and the governing bodies and the people who turn up and the police. We've seen here with the report on Hillsborough you know, fans were exonerated. But even so, even after that, you know, we get the situation where you've got the, we've got Liverpool Man United, which, you know, for all intents and purposes, is the biggest game in England.
Uh-huh. It's the classic.
And before that, all Sky News can talk about is why, is how the fans will behave. And every line of questioning before the game, you've got Andy Burton and talking to Ray Houghton before the game, saying like, "Well, what are the fans going to do? What's going to happen? What's you know, are they going to behave themselves?"
As if Ray Houghton will know this.
Yeah, as if Ray Houghton. And every time Ray Houghton tries to steer the conversation back onto
to
the game.
Yeah.
No,
talk about
no. Old Two Phones won't let him. But Two Phones is going to say, no. You're not. We're not talking about football here. We're talking about
Well, they're anxious because I mean, if it's occurred to us, the chances are it's occurred to them, and they've just pumped hundreds of millions of pounds into football.
Yeah.
And the last thing they want is a bunch of bellends turning up and ruining everything.
Yeah.
And turning away perfectly decent middle class families with their Ford Focuses and other products that are sponsored.
And all that lovely match day revenue.
Yeah. I mean, obviously they're diminishing because of the economy, but you know, they are still out there.
Yeah.
And if they turn their back on the game and go and, you know, do something else instead, then, you know, it could, you know, have, you know, severe consequences for the industry.
Strange way of doing it, though, by demonising the people that are paying the money. I mean, with all of these things, this is a small group of idiots who decide they want to chant something horrific about people have been crushed to death at a football match, which is just a horrible thing to do, or drag up a 50-year-old plane crash.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's ridiculous. It's a handful of people that do it.
Yeah.
But for a major broadcaster to allow the subject to drift onto that is...
I think they've got carried away with the whole Twitter thing.
Mm.
I think that they've seen the activity on Twitter and they have perhaps misattributed the just how severe that is, how widespread that is.
Mm.
Twitter amplifies people that everyone's views. A good tweet is retweeted. A filthy, horrible tweet is also retweeted.
Mm. Is that part of the problem? And Stan Collymore. I mean, you were talking about earlier that the standard thing to do these days is to retweet something horrific that's sensitive. And does that give oxygen to
Stan Collymore? It should be said, didn't do that. He put them all in his favourites, and he called the cops, which is the correct thing to do.
Right.
Others who are abused tend to retweet their abuse, which I'm not certain that's wise, because one, it invites another argument, because people would then presumably tweet the abuser back and then make things worse. And also, it does serve to just amplify the situation. Yeah, if you've been abused, you think you've been treated unfairly, then call the authorities. Mm. You know,
there have been some rather ugly incidents away from football. I'm sure they've probably happened with footballers as well, where celebrities have been or thought that they've been trolled, where what they've really been is criticised.
Yes, I read that blog post too. Yeah. It was really, really interesting.
Yeah,
and all that's happening is they're just being criticised.
Yeah. Yeah, and then what they'll basically do is then they'll go to their loyal following of fans and say, right, chase this guy off Twitter.
Exactly.
Because,
so they then become the trolls.
Which is bullying in itself, isn't it?
And there's no reason why, and I'm sure that there may well be examples of that having happened
in the football realm as well. It's actually closer to the real definition of trolling.
Of trolling, yeah.
Than the actual... Yeah, what is being deemed as trolling.
We're using the word troll, not in its probably its accurate sense, because to troll is to disrupt and to ruin people's fun. It's not to heap abuse on people. It's not... But it's become this kind of catch-all phrase for general abuse and unpleasant behaviour. Whereas there is a more specific, definition to trolling. I don't think that it would be any difference. I mean, you looked at Rio Ferdinand's tweets during John Terry's court case, which I thought were really, really close to the knuckle, because you think, well, look, you know, you're commenting on an actual court case is actually happening right now, you should perhaps be more careful and more circumspect about
it. Is it risk of contempt of court?
Because I believe that it did come before the Beak, and but I think the magistrate or the judge sort of went, well, no, it's fine. But there's always that possibility that an overzealous judge could perhaps... And then, you know, he would have found himself in trouble. But around that time, of course, Rio got himself in trouble because of the Chock Ice tweet.
Yeah.
And almost certainly because he worked himself up into a bit of a lather, and he ended up responding to a tweet that it was in relatively poor taste, and ended up getting £45,000 fine as a consequence.
Mm, yeah.
When really, if he'd just been a little cooler about the whole thing, then it wouldn't have happened. And I think that's what everybody just needs to do, is they just need to be cooler about the whole thing.
Just stop,
you know, be much more Fonz-like when it comes to football. Because
I think it's
only a bloody game.
The chocolate ice comment was particularly interesting, because I seem to remember Ian Wright, in his playing day, making a similar accusation against another professional, but I think you called him an Uncle Tom.
Yeah, which is a very serious thing.
Yeah,
to say.
Which is perhaps even more cutting than
was it that Lennox Lewis who accused Frank Bruno of that once?
Yes, I think so.
Well, Frank, I don't know if it was Lennox Lewis, but Frank Bruno was certainly
Bruno with a big proviso.
Yeah.
Definitely two black boxes at enjoying some rivalry, and and that's not the thing that you call.
No, I mean, this is the thing. That would be like in boxing, trash talking is obviously, you know, it's part of the theatre of it. But there are steps where it goes too far, isn't it?
And but also, they understand that it's all part of the razzmatazz. And in boxing, you have a natural sense of closure because they all get into the ring
and they have a fight.
And they settle the matter with their fists.
That
doesn't happen in football.
Have we just found the solution to what do we do instead of penalties?
No.
Has anyone might have thought this out?
We embarked on this podcast thinking, well, will this lead to violence? And we're in the process of actually now recommending that.
Yes, I think it will.
And we think it should.
And we've got another quarter now to go.
Oh no, let's try and unpick that. But the thing with football, of course, is that because it's a continual narrative, whereas to a certain extent a boxing match does have that closure. Obviously there are rematches. But in football there's the next game, which in many cases is two or three days later.
Yeah.
So the tension and the unpleasantness continues and ratchets up over a course of a week and never goes away. And that's why, you know, when Manchester United and Liverpool were very keen to try and draw a veil over their aspects of their rivalry over the last few years, that's probably, you know, got a little bit too heated.
Mm.
And I would imagine that they've probably succeeded. It's just, you know, a few idiots at the end of the game who were trying to keep the flame alive, but I don't think that they will succeed.
Yeah, hopefully a dying breed.
Mm, absolutely.
Yeah, it is worrying, because I don't think we're seeing more of this. I think, we are seeing more of it. I don't think there is more of it. I think what has happened is it's just moved away from the BBSs and the forums.
Mm. Oh, it's always been there, yeah.
Where it was all hidden away, and no one could give an absolute toss about where it was on the forums.
Yeah, well, it's like all hideous crime. It's always been there. It's not on the rise. It's just we're just discovering ways of discovering it, and then it's unpleasant when we're confronted with it. But this has always been here. People like that have always existed.
If you go to a football match, you mean like it's usually the guy who's got the season ticket behind you.
Well, indeed, yeah, absolutely, and you'd be surprised. I mean, and it's not restricted to income brackets or classes as well, or class.
Certainly
as well.
No.
People with considerable, yeah, indeed. You know, there are people in the Emirates with season tickets who are just as incapable of controlling themselves in a football match as a working class guy who's standing out or watching the game in a pub because he can't afford to get in anymore. There's no boundaries to this. And we just have to, the best way to try and deal with it is just probably just to be a little bit calmer about the way that we approach the game and try not to work everybody up and get everyone excited. Football is such an exciting and emotional game anyway. You don't need to have the fire stoked anymore. I mean, a good game of football will always get the blood pumping and inevitably leads to, you know, outbursts of anger and, you know, for most people, it passes seconds after it's gone, but for others it tends to dwell and fester.
So where do you think where is a line to be drawn? I mean, do we think that we all know where the lines are, but when you see a crowd at, say, Stoke or something like that, which is a very vociferous crowd, you know, they are very partisan, you know, they will shout down every refereeing decision that goes against them. But is that even though it's within the nature, within an acceptable nature, how close is that, and is actually like trying to propagate that, trying to get this cauldron atmosphere? Does that allow negative seeds to grow?
Well, I think it can do.
Yeah.
But again, I mean, if you focus on the match,
yeah,
on the players, and try and take it to a certain extent away from the nature of the rivalry. Everyone knows about the rivalry, but just think more about the actual game itself and whether it's going to be a good game or whether it's going to be a bad game. And just allow the rivalry just to continue on, and it will do so without it necessarily having. I'm not saying that Sky are responsible for you know, people's unreasonable and unruly, unpleasant behaviour, but I am suggesting that people just need to perhaps, you know,
just calm down.
Just calm down.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I think I mentioned Stoke, and sorry, Stoke fans, if you think, but the booing of Aaron Ramsey when he goes there. Is the sort of thing, well, is that acceptable? Is that really really just something, or is that just a complete lack of class?
It is just a complete lack of class. But it's nothing to get worried about. I mean, players do get booed, and sometimes they get booed for all kind of crazy reasons. And I've never understood booing, because I suspect that for most professionals, they use it as a motivator, and they would suggest also that professionals are trained to use it as a motivator, you know, and so I think it's a really stupid thing to do. I think most of the time, players may well play better, or certainly don't play any worse. I mean, it's very rare for a player to get freaked out by being barracked by home fans.
There was a player a season ago who got really upset on the pitch. I forget his name, but he was racially abused by.
Right.
By someone to his face.
Yeah.
That would be... I remember
who that was. But
Was it Dwight York and the Blackburn a few years ago? Of course, racial abuse, individual racial abuse directed towards black player from a member of the crowd is a different thing. We're not talking about that.
Yeah, no, but...
You're just talking about booing someone for an arbitrary reason. But yeah, I mean, obviously, aiming abuse is an entire...
Yeah, I mean, like, the things that get shouted... I mean, if you've ever sat down by the advertising hoardings, when any player comes along and is taking a throw-in or a free kidney, the sort of things that are level at them from people in the crowd that you wouldn't expect it to come from is quite shocking sometimes.
Yeah. But I think that to a certain extent, the arena is and has been by convention a place where you go to work out your issues.
Yeah.
And it's all part of the process. Obviously, there are lines of acceptable behaviour even there, which you mustn't cross. But generally speaking, you can get away with a hell of a lot more. But in the football, because you pay your money, you go to
because you're anonymous as well, aren't
you? Yeah, and because you've got this... But
of course now, you've got social media where your arena is your front room.
But then
or the bus to work.
And that's where a really thick line has to be drawn. And say, look, you know, you're not in the football stadium now. You're not in your front rooms shouting at the television.
Yeah.
You're addressing everyone. There's a distinct possibility that everybody who uses Twitter could see your tweet.
So are you taking the Sepp Blatter approach of, you know, once the final whistle's gone, you shake hands and that's it?
No. I don't know why you would infer that would be the case. No.
Just to tweak your
look. No, not at all. As I said, I mean, there's got to be lines of acceptable behaviour, and that's really what we're talking about. Yeah. I mean, one thing... Shouting and hurling abuse at a player anonymously is one thing, and then going on Twitter afterwards and then shouting the same abuse at them directly is a different thing. There's lines to be drawn, but you know.
Yeah, I suppose it's the most famous incident of a supporter hurling abuse at a player. It's probably got to be the Cantona incident.
Well, yes. Yeah. And, I mean, there are many people, even they don't say it terribly loudly, but there are many people at Palace who, you know, who feel that, You know, perhaps there was an element of justice in that incident.
Certainly was. He was a right pyrrhic.
He is known around these parts. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, physical assault on any human being is wrong, and quite rightly, he was arrested and charged, and served his punishment. But yeah, I mean, there are a few people who feel that, you know.
Mm.
Indeed.
So where is it going then? You talk about lines, but you can't police this. It's impossible. You can police it after the fact, but then, you know, it's the genie's already out of the bottle, isn't it?
Where it's going is that it may well be that Twitter is a complete fad anyway, and in a few years people will stop using it. But I suspect that the social networking thing is here to stay, and so the people's ability to create media and express themselves in this manner will continue. And I suspect that over the course of years, we will establish a consensus of what is acceptable and unacceptable behaviour. And we will learn when to block and shun people and when not to. And at the moment, it's a big mishmash, and we've not been successful in defining our boundaries. And then the social networks themselves may well, the actual software may be finessed so that it will be possible for users to do this.
Mm.
In terms of people's behaviour generally, well, there's nothing that can be done about it. Not within the realms of this podcast. It's not a football thing, it's a social thing. You know, you need to have, we need to live in a better world in order to really tell it. But what the worry, of course, is that if it gets worse, if it amplifies further, and that's what it is, it's amplification, it's not growth, it's amplification, that it will, as I said, turn people away. And the worry is that the game will suffer in England and conceivably elsewhere as a consequence of this sort of thing.
Yeah, it's the media has a fine balancing act to perform, because it's still got to promote this whole feeling of importance of the game, of mm-hmm. individual fiction.
Watch the football.
Yeah, keep watching the football.
Keep watching
this
the
is
football.
Important. This game is important. Yeah.
Every
it's
goal,
vital.
Every goal matters.
Every goal matters. And to make it, and to drill it into the heads of fans that actually this is vital. You know, losing is terrible. Winning is everything.
Mm.
And, you know, an attack on anything to do with your club is an attack on you. Is the extension of it. But they've also got to say, oh no, come on, it's only a game, ha ha ha, right, we're all one big football family.
Well, I mean, there's football and there's football, isn't there? I mean, there's results, which are really, really important, but there's also the longevity of the sport itself.
Yeah, exactly.
And the importance of your club and your community and what it means to you personally. And these are the incredibly positive aspects that football brings to communities. And that is very much in the keeping of the sort of progressive left of the media, and with all institutions like Supporters Direct, who do fine work in promoting supporter engagement in clubs and encouraging supporter ownership and encouraging clubs to engage more with their supporters, not with a view to winning football matches, but with a view to sustaining the club, and the club then in turn giving back to the community. That's what it's all about, really.
Yeah.
And maybe we need a little bit more of that, and a little bit less, you know, well, who's going to win?
Yeah.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah.
So, a nice way to wrap it up, I think, there, Terry.
Thanks, man.
For 2 weeks in a row as well. I'm becoming a big fan, I have to say.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. <so.
laughs> Well, thank you, guys, and thank you for listening. We will we'll see you next week. Thank you.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @soundoffootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.